This is Hidden Killers Live with Tony Bruschi, Stacey Cole, and Todd Michaels.
Monique Tepe did everything you're supposed to do when you leave a bad situation. She got out after 7 months. She didn't drag things out. She let him keep the house. She let him have the rings. She just wanted out. She paid him what she owed. She moved back to Ohio, rebuilt her life, fell in love, got married, had two kids, put 8 years of time between her and him. Life had moved on for all intents and purposes. Her family says, though, that she never said Michael McKee's name after the divorce. She only called him the ex-husband. They say she did talk about the emotional abuse, about the torment, how it still haunted her to that day. They say she always worried about him coming for her. 8 years later, police say he drove 300 miles in the middle of the night and killed her anyway. Jennifer Coffin, after retired FBI special agent, is with us to help break this down as we look at the more personal angle of this. I know you've said about this case that it reflects deep-seated resentment and hate that just built up. What do we know about the psychology of someone who holds a grudge for 8 years after a seven-month marriage?
Yeah, you know, listen, he obviously loved this woman in his sort of way, right? A lot of people sadly love like that, where he had to control, where he, it was going to be her with him. And if that was going to happen, she wasn't going to have a life outside of that. We see it over and over again. I think what everybody is sort of latching onto is why the huge hiatus, even with Betty Broderick, who did this exact same crime with a gun in the exact same way, it would seem, 4.5 years about for her to reach her melting point. That's a long time too. But this is what was in between him being able to finish his business. He was getting getting his residency completed, and he was embroiled in becoming a vascular surgeon. I think that's the only reason that this didn't happen far sooner, is he was basically distracted, very much so distracted, right? And I know all of us know doctors. My sister was a neonatologist. Let me tell you, their life, and even afterwards, their life is being a doctor in those types of jobs. I mean, they live, eat, and sleep it. They lose their relationships. They barely have a relationship at all with their children because that's the life they live. Not all, I'm just saying many, it seems like that was him. And I think it distracted him from what he knew he was going to do in time, and that was take her life.
And I think if you look at folks like this and their way that their brains function, when used well, you can do amazing things. He did amazing things. The fact that he got as far as he did being a vascular surgeon shows an incredible amount of focus and regulation and a rigidity in thinking that allows one to do that. And thank goodness that there are brains that work that way. An obsession on a specific topic to become savantish at it. That's who you want as a vascular surgeon. Unfortunately, those same sorts of folks, it doesn't mean that their brains stop working that way in other aspects of life, sometimes in relationships. Some folks can, some folks can't. And I'm going to guess it kind of applied in the other way too. Just like you were saying, he was distracted, meaning all of his effort, all of his obsessive focus to such a level was over there in his education and getting certified in what he does. Then that happened. Okay, now there's more place for that energy to be dispelled. Where does that get dispelled? How about right back to that relationship that ended? Let's focus some more energy back over here. And the obsession and the uber focusing and the ruminating, I'm guessing it was that level of, pardon the pun, like surgical focus that that probably went into that relationship as well when he finally got more time to expel his energy that way.
And remember, too, Tony, what he has built, at least some, including him, I think, saw unraveling. Yeah. So everything he worked so hard in the interim, a lawsuit, people chasing him. Obviously, he was concerned about it, or he wouldn't give false addresses and false numbers. I mean, he was worried about it. He didn't want to be confronted with those issues. And so I think that's a clear indication of where his, head was at. And I also want to see this because I think this is the critical part investigatively right now, what I would be doing. I want to know how many other times, and there's a lot of tolls on that road, how many other times he was there? How many other times he was there? How many times is this, again, I equated a little bit to a Brian Koberger. Talking about somebody that's very educated, smart, and resolved to commit an horrendous crime. I just think there's going to be many other times he went there to stalk and surveil.
I'm going to guess so too. I'm going to guess, granted, I mean, we don't know yet, but as far as we can understand, he really wasn't a part of Monique's life, as, at least as far as the family has said, and at least as far as Monique was aware of. But I do wonder that same thing. How much in those, how many times in those 8 years was he not far away?
You know, I wonder if he would have had time though.
I don't know, but he didn't have he didn't seem to have any sort of social life outside of work. So if he's having, I mean, from what we know, so I'm wondering if that time that could have been dedicated to rebuilding his life and finding new relationships and love or whatever the hell he's looking for, how much of that was spent on the obsession and being knowing about Monique and her life today? How much of that went beyond just like Facebook stalking, and how much of it were where he was at the other side of the park, you know, when her and her kids were there? That sort of stuff is what I wonder about.
Well, and I told you I did that research on the Google Trends.
Yeah.
I found very interesting trending, and this would not be, oh, I need a dentist. And so everybody on that day looked for a dentist. This was huge spike that occurred. Gosh, don't hold me to it. One of them was the address and one of them was Dr. Tepe. And one was November 30th and the other was December 5th. I don't have all these documents with me looking at them right now. It doesn't matter. Yeah. Because who is fanatically looking at an address that isn't even for sale? Mm-hmm. And who's fanatically looking up Dr. Tepe when he's flatlined other than that? Right. Yeah. You're flatlined unless you something major has happened. And then you're going to have a huge his spike is huge on that day. I think it was November 30th, the address on December 5th. So I really believed at that time we didn't know who this was. Mm-hmm. I really believe that whoever the murderer was really stalking that day.
I can't confirm this, but I know some other creators have done some research on this and I've seen it. And I mean, I believe it. I can't confirm it, though, that have looked at trends on certain terms. And it's been reported by some that the video, the wedding video of the Tepes giving their vows also saw a dramatic spike right before the murders.
Yikes.
Meaning like somebody obsessively watching them. And I don't think it was them. Like, no. You know, let's relive the magic. It's more like stewing and being fed that stew of poison that's going to make someone drive 300 miles to execute someone. What's your take on the interest payment set up on the like $1,235? It was like some very minuscule amount in the big picture in their divorce proceedings that Monique and Michael had, where if she didn't pay it by X date, it was going to be like credit card interest level, like 24% monthly interest. It was a weird dynamic to see on anything, especially like a divorce decree with interest that it felt, I don't know, it felt mechanical. It felt weird. What was your take on that?
Well, a couple of things and combined with your point there.
Yeah.
Look, she left after 7 months.
Yeah.
Why do you think it took 2 years to finalize this thing? I'm going to tell you two words. Michael McKee is why.
Yeah.
He didn't want it finalized. I've met people like this. We all know of situations like this where they just drag it out and drag it out and want something more and won't agree on anything. I could give you so many examples of people I know that have done this. Some of them for 7, 8, 9 years, they'll drag it out.
Yeah.
I drug it out as long as he could. And this was one of those ways. Just think if I say this, that she's going to say, oh my God, this is ridiculous. I'm going to fight it. Only what does Monique do? She's like, just take it. Yeah. I don't want the house. I don't want the rings. I'll pay you for the rings. I'll pay you for anything. Just get out of my life. And mm-hmm. we've all known people like that. One of my very, very best friends had a situation like that. And she wasn't married to anybody bad, but she just wanted out.
Sure.
And they'll fight it.
Yeah. I mean, because they had every opportunity to just end this peacefully. And a sane person, a sane mind would be like, oh, you know, we could, because they could have annulled it at that point in time. It could have been done in like a week if they wanted it to. But sometimes you have these people and they will hold on for dear life. And I don't understand the way of thinking. It's a very unhealthy way of thinking. Why would you hold on to something for someone that doesn't want to be with you? But it goes back to that mindset, which I'm sure he's still telling himself of, you know, if only she loved me this way, she'll see it better. Someday she'll come around. She'll come around and then she'll see it and we'll live happy. It's this delusion that these people live in. And it's so spooky and it's so scary. And they live amongst us. They operate amongst us. They are vascular surgeons. You know, these are everyday folks. But it's such a scary way of thinking. The family of Monique said they were not a shock when they found out that she had died and that her husband had been killed. Not a shock. 8 years after a divorce. I don't, like, God, that says a lot. I think about the impact that this man made, not only on her, but on their family, that they would still think that 8 years after this, that would be the first person that you would kind of come to your mind and go, that's not surprising. What's your take on that?
Well, just think about this with Monique Tepe still talking about this. Monique yeah. Tepe still relaying just, you know, with closest friends that she had more recently met that weren't mutual friends, her still talking about this. So clearly this was so deeply etched. And I understood too, and Tony, correct me if I'm wrong, but mm-hmm. I understood too that it wasn't like the last contact was 9 years ago or 8 years ago. This was something that continued on, at least to some degree. Yeah. And again, we talked about this. Why was the dental office up in arms within, you know, really a half an hour or so yeah. of them not showing up? And I think it's going to come out. It's because Monique talked about the ex and because of things that may have been going on with the ex. It's the only thing that would explain really that behavior.
I agree. And I don't have it confirmed, but a lot of reports are coming out that he allegedly had been sending birthday cards to her, signed yeah. your husband for quite some years after the divorce ended, or at least one time. Unconfirmed, but you know, that's not a move of someone that's, you know, just wishing you well. You know, where like we left in amicable terms, where, you know, I wish her well, happy birthday. No, your husband, that's just a clear, I'm still here. I yeah. still think of you this way. That and if you know the effect that you're having on someone, the visceral effect emotionally you're having on these people, that's a control move mm-hmm. by someone that's really sick in the brain.
Yeah, it's a passive aggressive attack.
Yeah. Yep.
It's yeah. just a passive aggressive thing, nothing less.
Is there anything in your mind when you look back on this that Monique could have done? I mean, I feel like she was a sitting duck, but I feel like, you know, she did everything right. She didn't sit there. She didn't poke the animal in the cage. She basically gray rocked it after the divorce. Didn't keep trying to like feed into his delusions, but his delusions didn't stop if he did this. And she became his victim anyway. I mean, what else? I mean, other than become more proficient in firearms training and have a gun in your bedstand, I don't know what else this woman could have done.
Well, and I agree with you on this, but I will say this. I'm going to be very interested in what the defense tries to dig up.
Yeah.
In other words, the defense, I think, because this is what the defense does, they're going to take any sort of text message, communication, letter, any email, anything where she contacted him back and try to twist that into, see, she let him on. See, she kept breadcrumbs out there. We don't know about anything like that. We don't.
We don't, yeah.
But the divorce itself is enough of a severance that, guess what? I don't want to be with you. Just because I've reached out and contacted you about something doesn't mean I'm giving you permission to be in my life again. So,
and what form was the contact in? I mean, if there was any, I mean, she may have completely had nothing, but it feels like, you know, he's out there fishing with those letters of your husband. You know, it's almost like he's trying to elicit some sort of response. Maybe she did, maybe she didn't. And if the response is like through an attorney, like no more contact, or we're going to file a restraining order, that, to a brain like that, that's still contact. Maybe there's still a chance for me. I mean, that's how these people work.
Well, and sometimes the worst thing for that person, even though I think it's the right thing to do, is block, disengage, move far away, everything he did. But sometimes that no contact, that being ignored is also a continued punch for him. He's reaching out saying happy birthday and she doesn't even respond. See what a terrible person she is. See how awful she broke our vows, not me. She deserves this. And that's where it all ends up, is they never think that they've done anything wrong. Even to this day, I bet you if I could go interview Michael McKee, he would say, she deserved this. Oh my gosh, I didn't do anything wrong. This is all
she couldn't do anything right in this situation.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't think she could, honestly. I mean, that's why it's like, and that's why it's so, as we get older, we learn more about how important it is to be careful of the folks you develop relationships with, because people like this exist they're out there, and you don't want them tagging along, you know, for as long as they feel like they need to tag along for. At the end of the day, you know, there's people like this, a sociopathic narcissist is how I'd probably describe him, but who knows? I mean, I can't diagnose him, but judging by the behavior, if you're to sum him up, that seems to be kind of what he is. We'll find out more as this continues to develop.
Want more on this case and others? Then press subscribe now and don't miss a moment of true crime coverage from Tony Bruschi and the Hidden Killers podcast.